Always has been, whether or not this is covered or not. In a number of the communities that I go through, Winona as well, being one, no horn zone. Is that a possibility? And can that be extended through the city of Carson?
So, quiet zones, as they're called in, our parts, that's a rare term. Quiet zones are possible. They are generally instigated by the unit of local government, you guys, and designed and implemented in cooperation with the local road authority, whoever owns that particular crossing, the Federal Railroad Administration, and I think in Wisconsin as well, the Office of the Commissioner of Railroads, OCR, has a role in that as well. Because of some of the federal requirements for safety at crossings, quiet zones require additional safety enhancements than just the arms and the gates and bells that we have today. If you've seen some of them, you may have noticed like a concrete median barrier that goes down the middle of the road as you're approaching the rail crossing. Additional safety features like that are required by the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, in order to prevent people from seeing the arms and gates down, not hearing a train whistle, and going around the arms and gates. So, for example, that's one additional treatment that's required. Other additional treatments might be to actually have four arms coming down, so you can't go around those. The specific design is really determined by the specific crossing, and again, in conjunction with you, the local unit of government, the road authority, the FRA, the local FRA here, and the Office of Commissioner of Railroads. There are costs associated with quiet zones that are generally borne by you and those and the road authority. So that can be done. It's probably something worth exploring just to find out what the design looks like and what the costs might be. But there's nothing that would inherently prohibit it in any of these processes.
At that time, this does prove to be a possibility and a feasibility, then the increased rail traffic that might be precipitated if something like this were put in. I guess we'd be looking to blow our city back, but especially we'd be looking to help decrease some of that cost. Okay, if it has to be discussed with Cochran. This is all an assumption on my part to talk to some of the residents of Cochran that they're concerned on the noise as well, and what we'll see residents close to.
What would be the proposed impact if this was in place of the crossing north, adjacent north and south? North end of Cochran, double O on the upper end of Buffalo City. Obviously, these trains aren't 10 cars. So, Great River Harbor up the road, they run a business that crosses the tracks. What is the impact is this going to have on them?
I'll let Dean answer that as well, but my understanding is that the cars, the trains, will all be built in the facility, so there won't be blocking the crossing as the trains are being built. There's enough tracks and their track capacity to build the trains within the facility. Then they would be pulled out of the facility onto our main line and taken to their final destination. So,
still have to get the cars there, though, correct?
Yes, they would be the same thing, though. The loading tracks are long enough that you could drive them all in, and I think most of the switch, again, the specific design of the facility is really all energy's responsibility. But my understanding is that that switching and breaking the part of the train into the cars that are going to be loaded can all be taking, take place on site. Is that, I don't know. That's right.
This is the proposed rail design, and that would include the closing of the
Fagan Road
and Perm, there's a Perman Road that's street, yeah.
I was, there are also, you know, crossings that are off this map that are not in your plot for this facility, that if trains are slowed and come down, they're going to affect traffic, they're going to affect accessibility. And so the switching into the rail, into the spurs, is it a quick switch? Is it, you know, obviously these trains can't go in their full bore, you know? And so that limits accessibility for the northern end of Buffalo City, Belvedere, again, the businesses of the Great River Harbor potentially. So I just, that's an impact that needs to be discussed.
And you're right. I mean, when they pull these loaded trains onto the main line, you know, that's the impact. But the unit trains are going to be put together inside the property, and that was the Fagan Road and Herman Street that I was talking about. But when we were at the Cochran meeting a week ago, you know, there was discussion about, you know, how many crossings and so on would be impacted. And Amy didn't have, she didn't, you know, she didn't have a, Amy's from the Burlington Northern, she's not here tonight, but she didn't have an estimation of how long it would take for those rail, you know, those unit trains to be to move through there.
We are correct, they're not coming in at full speed or going out at full speed.
Right.
So we've got some acceleration and deceleration back. So, you know, today a train moving at full speed might get across the crossing in 20 seconds, 15 seconds. You know, you might be talking more like a couple minutes, but they're going to be going at a lot less speed. But yes. I don't know that any of us can specifically predict the time, but it will be more than the train moving through at full speed, basically.
What kind of trains do you look at pulling out of in a day?
We're probably talking about 4 unit trains a week. Yeah. It won't be per day, but more per week. So.
But then you're bringing in replacement cars to fill the spots with the ones that you have filled in.
That's right.
Put into service, so
yeah.
It's a constant
turnover. Yeah.
So, with Burlington Northern involvement in this, obviously it's on the main line, but how involved with that being built and anything else? Do they incur any costs in the project, that thing?
We do not incur any costs, no. We will take care of the construction of the switches that connect to our main line, and about 400 feet of track from those switches that go into the facility. All the track in the facility will be built by All Energy and their contractors.
Yeah. Do you charge them for the cost?
Yes, and we just do that work, so we have our own crews doing that work. We do that to make sure that our quality standards.
So is this something that the railroad took for us, or if
Sure.
they really want their individual?
Yeah. As a general point, you know, the of course, we want to move and haul goods. That's our business. So, yes, anytime somebody brings us more business, we like that. So, yes, of course, we would support it in that sense. We certainly see an increase in the demand for sand. This is obviously a large source of it for the country. So whether this facility is built or some other facility is built, I mean, there will likely be additional facilities, you know, in this vicinity. Maybe not necessarily on our line. Of course, we would prefer to have them on our line, but maybe not necessarily on our line. So we definitely see that as a trend. Moving forward, it is an immediate trend moving forward. So that's just sort of a general statement, but yes, we would more than welcome the business and we'd be more than happy to move the cars.
You're saying there's going to be facilities built on a BN line throughout this area, you just don't know?
Well, there's, what I'm trying to say is we think the way the market is going, there will be, if there is additional demand for sand, and there will be additional facilities needed built in order to meet that demand. Whether or not they occur on our line is not a given. They could occur on CPs or CNs or UPs. But we would prefer them on our line because then we get business. So, yes.
Have you ever worked on any projects with people who do that?
I don't believe we have anything going to be there at all. No, again, our line, if you flip over the map, you know, we're just along this western border. I believe there are other facilities, certainly, in the interior of the state that are not within the
area. So is that CP or is that CN and UP are the other major lines that are hauling out of Wisconsin?
Who's pulling the water for a machine?
That's on the river, is it? VN's on Prairie du Chien. Now, who's the other one down at the Prairie du Chien besides the Coleman?
I think in Prairie du Chien itself, I think that is just the DM.
Just the DM. Yeah.
We wanted to come here and show you that, yes, this is something. Again, we see that there's demand for this market in the future, and obviously that's our business, so we would like to capture that market. So to the extent that Dean and All Energy are successful, that's good for us. So we're here to, you know, share that with you, acknowledge that, and let you know. So we are supportive in the general sense. We're not financially supportive or a shareholder or a stakeholder in the project per se, right? We're going to get business from it.
Did BNSF have any input in the scouting of the area where this line, where this is proposed? Did you guys have nothing? They approached you?
They approached us. I don't think it's a great secret. You know, several years ago, we were looking for additional facilities, and this was one of them that was on the radar. If you know this area far better than I, not a lot of large tracts of land next to our track, but there's a big body of water next to it. So there's not many to choose from.
projects that are involved with different types of aggregate, whether it be granite or sand or, but that's forte, and that's what they're real interested in being involved in funding.
They've only been around since last October.
Well, it actually is comprised of several retired executives from the aggregate industry or industries. So, you know, the principals have been around for quite some time. But
because this really doesn't tell you what the money is really coming from. I mean, it's not like a private equity firm where you can see what their funds, you know, how much they're taking out of their funds and what they're buying in, or it's not a bank. It's a company that's been around since October. You know, it has no physical location. This doesn't give us a warm, fuzzy feeling, is what I'm trying to say. Well, it really doesn't tell us where the money's coming from.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, this is a big deal. You know, you're asking us to annex land, rezone land, close railroad crossings and the access to Highway 35, and yet there seems to be a lot of secrecy on who's providing the money. And I guess it just makes it a lot more difficult. I don't know why it's a secret. Most people want to talk about their projects. And
well, no, we're not trying to be secretive. We've known that the gentleman, John Solomon, we've known him for several years. He's known my principal engineer for, I think, probably 7 or 8 years. So, no, we're not trying to be secretive. We were asked to provide a letter from the funding source, and that's what we've done. We're not trying to be secretive.
Yeah, I think when we got the letter, we looked at it, and then when we've got a computer, we try to find out information on those people that are saying they're going to invest millions in our community. And what we got in return was very little of a person from Georgia with no business or physical address, nothing else but a letter. As Gene said, there's not a lot of numbers behind it.
You can provide us with, audited financial statements and showing liquidity, fine, but
these are things that have to consider in this, even, going through with this project, is knowing where all this money is going to come from and how it's going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
We'd have an investment and we owe it to everybody that's in this room, regardless of the Buffalo City or wherever, to know what's going to happen. So,
well, we'll be happy to get you more information. So now you get comfortable with that.
I think we're all in the same vein along that same understanding that this is a major investment that they're undertaking. Not all businesses thrive, and if for some reason, if this were to come to fruition and did not become profitable in the coming years, then what's gonna be here at that point?
Well, the facility would have probably $17 million invested in it to complete the facility. So, the facility will be built and operating. So I think your question is, what happens if the facility didn't continue as an ongoing facility, then what would happen? What would happen is the assets would get sold, and the organization would either reorganize or the assets would get sold, and the shareholders would.
This company that's been around since last October might disband, and all of a sudden it's gone.
Well, the facility would be already built, and and those assets would be in the ground, so it'd be pretty hard for those to move on. But, as the process goes, it would go on to wherever the assets were sold to.
We've got a couple of pictures here. This facility looks somewhat close to the Prairie du Chien facility. How close to what you're proposing is we don't really have an architect rendering of what might go here if and whenever ever comes through. There's quite a variance in some of these. If I look at Hipston and then I look at Prairie du Chien, there's a pretty huge difference in functionality and appearance.
I haven't seen the Prairie du Chien facility, but here's how I view it, is that ours are ladder tracks, which is what we have here.
Okay.
And so when you take a facility that's got, you know, all the ladder tracks as opposed to a track that's either a circle track or half circle like this is, but if you took these silos in this facility and put it on to the ladder tracks, that's how I would best describe the facility as right.
I'm looking at the egress, truck egress, your dump facility, your truck facility, like this?
But to give it a better scope, I would take this facility and put it out, next to these ladder tracks here.
Okay, so this is a incorrect. This drawing is rendered.
Well, these are silos that are here.
This is a truck unload, truck and rail car transload right here.
Right.
That you're saying this would be down here on the ladder track.
He's got the silos here, and I believe that this truck egress here would go on and go to where those silos are and load up those silos.
That's an enclosed building. That's kind of where I'm wondering, in relation to what other operation are we? Because I know both the Blair facility and the Prairie du Chien facility offload, the truck pulls in, the door closes, it's all done pretty much by camera, remote control. And there's air handling at that point from truck dump all the way through the facility to rail dump. And I just was wondering, you can't really tell they're unloading trucks and unloading trains.
Right.
And just trying to figure out what would be put here.
To be honest with you, I need to go and look at the Prairie du Chien facility. So I can answer the question, because I don't want to tell you something that's
not after, but I won't do that. Well, and we just want to know kind of what's going on, what you're proposing here. So at this point, we're almost as confused as you are.
But as you know, that the unload, the trucks that unload will be, that sand will be going into the silos, into respective silos that have different screens of sand, and then the train will go through the load facility and then into the main cars.
Except the coal loaders like that. We're proposing a ladder here. you would have this last track.
Yeah.
So this one.
And see the fallacy of this and that this is silence.
Right.
Correct.
If this was silence.
Yeah.
This is probably. Internal silence.
Right.
You would have a much more compact truck on hold, sorry, a little rail.
Yeah.
Is what I'm.
That's right. Mel, have you been at the Prairie du Chien facility?
I've been to the Prairie du Chien facility, but I do not recall, and this is about 5 years ago. Across from there, there's a site in Iowa, just down the river, called the Patterson Mine. But I think the significant factor is whether you go to Menominee, Chippeque, Chippewa Falls, New Auburn, you'll see within 20 miles at least 8 different transload facilities going into rail. And I think the significant factor for a board or neighbors is that in none of those will you see any dust or any exposure to dust. You can pull into the parking lot, see the employee cars, there's no dust on the cars. They are dust-free facilities, and they're as big as this one, the EOG one in Chippewa, the Chippewa Sand in New Auburn. And I think any one of those are referred to quite often as frac sand, but there are 64 sand mines in Chippewa County. I'm sorry, 83 in Chippewa County, 67 in Bergen County. They've been around since the 1800s, producing sand for concrete, for blacktop, for glass, for any one of the 40,000 products made from sand. And all of those are controlled in terms of truck delivery, control of dust, so that it isn't exposed to employees or to the neighborhood or whatever. But in each one of those, and I'm just would add Prairie du Chien to the list, that every one of those is different, but they all accomplish the same thing in the sense of being dust-free location.
Does Patterson have a transload, or do they have their truck all out? Because that's where Prairie du Chien gets their stuff. Up over the hill, down around McGregor, and across the bridge.
Well, Patterson ships a lot directly to Texas.
Okay.
All over.
So they do. Okay.
But the Prairie du Chien site, the owner has their big mine site in Boscobel, just on the north edge of Boscobel towards Fenimore. So that's about a, I think about a 25 mile jaunt from their mine to Prairie, whether it's for barging out or putting on the rail.
One of the things I've heard people say is, why would someone want to build that here? We have no sand mines right here. They're all in Transmo County or the other side of Buffalo County. With the cost of that extra transportation, why would you come here to load trains instead of just doing it where they already have the loading facilities, you know, near the mines? How would you answer somebody's question?
And it goes back to what Peter said. There are just not that many places where you have a facility that's large enough to accommodate, you know, it takes a couple hundred acres, or you know, 150 acres of land that is suited for the facility to be able, you know, land that's flat, that's on the rail. There just aren't out that many facilities that are big enough to facilitate it.
Does some of it have to do with the fact that one of them are on Burlington Northern lines? Is there some cost benefit to having one of the
I'm talking specifically on the Burlington Northern, because that's where we want to be, is on the Burlington Northern. So, and Burlington Northern is a premier rail that facilitates the logistics to a lot of our customers that the other rails don't.
So the other extra cost.
So the cost is certainly, yeah, the transportation costs are a big part of looking at, you know, at the total equation.
If the end customers are on our line, and you create a facility next to CN or CPR, you'd still have to pay that train line to bring into our train line to bring. So whether that's a truck doing that movement or a train doing that movement, that's all part of the transportation cost. And, I assume smarter people than I have figured out that's a cheap, you know, this is the cheapest way to do it.
So you're saying the capacity, there just needs to be more loading capacity in the area?
Loading capacity on the BN. There are not many facilities that are loading sand on the BN in this area, in Wisconsin, frankly, outside of the prairie. And, you know, there are others. I was in Hager City this morning. A friend of mine owns property on the BN, you know, and there's probably going to be another facility up there, but that's quite a ways from here.
Where's that one going? North of Hager City?
It's north of where the airport is in Hager City. Yeah, so it would be north of Hager City. The actual town or village of Hager City.
Okay, because you got the airport and then you got highway 10 and the industry in the middle.
And you go across 63 and up.
Okay,
down.
We
plan on using the lock code for the rail, and the rail is a big part of this whole process, and you really have to have experienced rail people. And so lock code will competitively bid it against some of the railroad companies, but you know, that's kind of our preferred.
And who's managing it then? Watco's going to do the rail.
Watco's going to do the rail. They'll be involved probably in possibly building the actual transload facility also. And we'll contract out the actual, you know, the building, the buildings. And we'll have also Watco manage the loading operation.
So the day-to-day will be Watco.
Right, and okay. They'll be subcontracted through us to manage that. Yeah.
And they've been around a number of years doing it.
They have.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there scales there? Does everything get weighed as the stuff going in? Do you know how much weight
it does? It does, yeah.
Now, Ron's been here. He was here last time. What about the other couple of landowners that are involved? I mean, they never come to the meetings. Made any progress with purchase agreements with all the land?
Al Farnham, it's Cars' land, but I've met with Al, and frankly, he's the other landowner that's involved. And I've talked with him, and I told him I'd give him a press to learn more on the process and have.
And
you know,
he's one of the most buildings in the world.
His maps keep moving a little bit. We'll probably end up having to redo this again. But I think this is gonna get shifted down a little bit. Rail's gonna end up being shifted down there a little bit. Let's start here. I gotta talk to the engineers.
I think that's assuming this landowner right here as well.
Yeah, and I've met with him, and I've met with him.
Okay.
With this proposed annexation running into actually Falls Pond and that, is there any other environmental impact or who would be responsible for that? Would that be the railroad? Would that be the energy?
It'll end up with us.
Yeah, okay. And then you're prepared to deal with that in the state of the end, whatever else is going to
happen. We are, and Kimberly is.
Could you bring that question up again, please? It's hard to hear you back.
Sorry, my question was, is the proposed annexation goes close to Dizzy Falls Pond, what kind of environment, mental impact would be on that, with the water being there and the, that just being in that general area, and who would be responsible?
Thank you.
Yeah, we work with Army Corps of Engineers and Wisconsin DNR on to avoid and have proper setbacks and any best management practices, you know, between the two. Like, do you need larger vegetative strip between, you know, concrete rooms, et cetera, once the plan gets a little more finalized. But absolutely, all the individual, local, state and federal governments will be involved in, you know, the permitting and design of those.
My assumption would have been probably incorrectly, but if you're closing Fagan Road crossing and closing the Herman Street crossing, and all egress to your property is going to be
35?
Your responsibility from 35 into your, because you're going to butt 35.
Right.
Okay, so there's zero road maintenance involved cost wise for a city or a county.
That's right.
Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Well, so do we do roads here? Do we have to dissolve them? Because this is still, these are still Buffalo City roads. If it becomes Buffalo City property, and we're still getting transportation aid for it, and I mean, we're still responsible for them, so.
Actually, them are Bellinger roads.
Yeah, they are Bellinger roads.
Well, they are right now.
Yeah, so yeah. We're not getting any aid for them.
Well, not right now, but you would if they became Buffalo City roads.
I'm not going to assume anything, I guess. I'll ask you, the two roads that are in there that lead into the Fagan Road down the intersection of Herman, which is going to be right in the middle of the tracks, should we make the assumption that those are going to be non-entities if this goes through?
Yes.
So those roads go bye-bye. Okay. I guess, as well, there's a number of people here that probably, and I don't mean to presume anything, are unaware of actually what happens at one of the facilities and how it happens as a truck turns off at 35 until it leaves on the train. Can somebody explain just a little bit to the citizens that are here what they might expect?
I'm gonna turn it over to Mel because I have not sat there and watched the whole process. Mel's been around this process. I have not.
Just a little bit, because I've just seen it once.
They vary quite a bit. They have a little one in the.
Would you go up front? Sir, would you go up front and talk to the people, please? Thank you.
I can't hear you.
The delivery of sand to the rail spur is done in a way that minimizes the manpower in the sense of the dumping process. It's usually end dumps, sometimes quad axles, doesn't really matter. But the dumping process is something that goes directly into a hopper. Different types of hoppers, some of them covered, you know, in case of rain and snow, so that the containment, if you will, is done in different ways. Some people have big plastic bubbles. Others have when it's hot and dry and windy, those exceptional days come up. They have something very similar to a sprinkler system that puts a light mist over the sand so that the dried sand doesn't blow and contaminate anything in the neighborhood. But a truck comes in, and they usually, at a maximum, look at 6 to 8 minutes to dump load into the hopper, pull away, and the next truck comes in, and it's just a loop process, and the loop isn't so much bigger than just going around this room in a circle. There's one route in, one route out, and usually they have a widened, like going on to 37 or 35, a widened road so that when ones come in, it stays in the direction of going to the right, one coming out will have a double wide and they can pass, and one goes on the acceleration lane. There's always acceleration lane and a turning lane. So it isn't like traffic had to stop behind them and that sort of thing. And they're timed in ways to facilitate, as an example, being a school superintendent background person, the concern I always had about trucks and being in this business was, well, what about trucks coming into your site at the time the school buses are loading? And there might be, and very easily the person in charge of the trucking system manages it in a way that it doesn't hit at the same time kids are loading the bus or unloading the bus. But the routing is timed, if you will, so that they're not congested, they're not lined up and sitting there waiting their turn. They're timed in a way both on the loading and unloading so that there's a continual sequence. And it's a very simple process. But every site I can think about and is a circular route kind of situation on site.
Okay, so we don't know yet what you're going to propose here, whether it's bubble, open air, building.
I need to get that detail to you from our engineers.
All right, so
I can tell you what I think, but I don't. That's not what I know. So let's just go with what I said.
To the point, I just happened to rush you a little bit. Excuse me. He was down attending a function on Prairie Chain and drove right by the facility down there. Was unaware that that's what it was. Unless you know what it is. You just don't. It's entirely enclosed. The truck pulls in. It's all the back doors from start to finish, from bottom up truck to into rail car through is through the sifting. And I guess we kind of like to know as well as time goes of just exactly what it is that would be proposed.
If you're on Sector 3 going north, you'll see two examples of where there's a little bit of a ramp and there's a width of the hopper, length of the hopper, and a bottom hopper. The bottom hopper, and it drops straight into a hopper and it's underground and goes into the facility.
That's Taylor? Taylor out there at 53?
The one I'm thinking of is the one in Chippewa, the one in New Auburn has the over where they have the bottom drop trucks.
Yep.
With the, I don't know what they're called, they're not end dumps either.
Belly dumps.
Belly dumps. So that's very common. The other end dump kind I've seen dump into an enclosed top and the high speed load conveyor system like the little one on Wheeler, which just feeds a monster hopper that gravity feeds into the wheel cars. So at least a half a dozen different kinds of loading systems.
So, happy to answer any questions. two points that I would like to make. First being, the frac sand is so great, why do we have about six trucks sitting out here drawing the weeds? That's for the reputation of the company. I just don't see where there's a, they would be going through the correct channels first time, first kind of sidestep and come to county level city. That being said, if I don't think they're reputable, if they get it through, what comes next? Does a wash plant go? Do the chemicals come with it? Triple County just had one where they've got a spill and the DNR is still assessing, as far as I know, what the damage is. The chemicals used are known to be cause cancer. I don't think any of us here need to have any more cancer around. Why cause more? The railroad app said about moving their uniform business. But yet, the government had to step in because they were shipping all the oil and our friend commodities weren't being moved. So that being said, if that happens here, who's going to move our commodities for our friends in this area? We're talking about servicing moving the vessel. Well, that's great, but I used to work on the foremost farms. They used to have a pot of corn and chewing. And a few years ago, they had the tax benefits. It didn't matter anymore. The same thing could happen.
No, but I might pose a question back as well. I think possibly, depending on transport and how it goes, who can answer the question about covered transport? I know the rail car going out isn't close. I'm not worried about rail car leaving because that's a hopper car with a manhole on, right?
Yeah.
You can transport the sand.
It's been dried and it's
so gone. If you had an open car, whether it's an open truck or an open car, would it get wet again? Would that keep the surface?
The trucks are covered, the cars, the train cars are covered, the trucks are covered.
That's what I thought. That's
not
the first thing.
Yeah, I mean, just to answer a couple of your concerns. This is not anywhere near or projected to be a wash facility. This is just a transport facility.
It's not a wash, it's not a dry facility. It's not processing the sand.
Okay, so
that is set.
Understood. No. It's all we can deal with at one time. So there's one kind of question. Yeah. Jacob said no, so. Okay, so there's a couple that may not make it feel good. Warm and fuzzy, but it might answer a couple of concerns a little bit. And as we go, we're all going to learn more.
concerns I brought, that I want is, kind of touches off what Al had mentioned. North Base in this whole scenario was the wastewater recovery program mentioned here. So you bring the sand in and you wash it, the water that comes out of the water table, and then you wash the sand and then you put it back in the ground. And it goes into our aquifer that comes through all of our homes, because we're all on the well system. We're the largest area in the state that has our own well system without a central water system.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Here as well, and you did just hear this is not going to be a watch facility, correct?
No, I did not. Okay. But I wanted to bring up that there are some 70 different chemicals that are used, and I'm worried about that.
This is not at all going to be a watch facility, zero chemicals.
All right, then I have no more questions.
Zero water use.
Zero water use.
All right. Chemicals. Okay. We'll hold you to that.
Okay, Mark.
Excuse me.
Thanks. Tony Petula.
One of the questions I got is, what is our value of our houses going to be when this comes about? Going to have noise, driving trucks 24/7, or is it going to be, you can hear the train in Bubble City and get the wind blowing the right way.
I don't know, there might be a question over there. Kevin, if you can talk with his cohorts and see if it's affected in any other community, possibly. Nobody's got a crystal ball to tell you, Tony, what's going to happen here. But all we can do is historically. And that is away from most of the Buffalo, so most of the Buffalo City.
And with my trucks are going to be coming down Highway 35 a day.
How many trucks are used now?
Our projection is a million tons a year is what we will begin with. And a million ton is 4 trucks an hour. And we would look to increase it to as much as 2 million ton. We don't know when that will be, if or when. 2 million trucks obviously would be twice that amount, 38 trucks an hour.
Do you envision operating more than one truck at a time, ever?
No.
Then, if we go back up, Mel was talking to us a little bit, he was saying every 6 to 8 minutes in some of these facilities. Is that accurate?
6 to 8 minutes, the time a truck comes in to load and be on the way out.
What do you get for a truck arrival?
That really depends on the volume of the site. I've seen some where they'll come every 10 to 12 minutes, 2.4 million ton plant in EOG plant in Chippewa. Others coming out of a Socorro mine up there, they only mine 6 months a year, and there's zero trucking in 6 months, so that's the other extreme. But as a rule, your trucking is scheduled to avoid the heavy traffic times, avoid the church traffic, and that's very manageable in terms of trucks maximizing time at low traffic periods in advantage to the mine site and then to the community. So they'll vary from school period. You'll ship more in the summer months than on a steady basis. And vary your shipping schedule to meet community needs. And I've seen everything from churches asking that nobody come by here on, no trucks go by here on funerals and weddings, and they reroute to accommodate the community. And that's a common feature to the advantage of the community and special facilities. So there isn't any one answer, because it will vary depending on events and school and that.
The other question is chemicals again. I'm sure you're watching there, and everything should be. Percentage you're still going to someone ground. By the time our wells, we don't just have out the seat energy.
Okay, back to reiterate again, that's it. Any chemicals at all?
No, there's not. Chemicals are what the washing and the water that's used and reclaimed in the washing process, and there is no washing.
Not at all here.
Zero.
I got a well in the same lot for a lake.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is it then totally pure chemicals on the same line? That's my question. The place where you use that chemicals, I see what goes on there. It's not what Jeremy said it shouldn't be, you know?
No, I agree. If I'm understanding it all correctly, that any sand that's trucked in essentially is not going to seek anything other than what you've made. It's going to be the inside of the truck, the inside of a hopper, on a conveyor, or in a rail.
Yeah, right? because it's already been washed and it's already been dried, so it's not going to be any water that's going to be coming draining out of the sand.
Joan Drescher?
No.
Okay. Mary Stengel?
If you build a safety zone for the quiet zone for the no horn deal, who puts that concrete in? The city, the county, the railroad, the energy company? Who's gonna, you know, the thing that's gonna keep you from dodging around the thing? Who's gonna usurp the cost of those safety things? Is that gonna be him or him or us?
Okay. It's on the city.
It would be on the city.
So, the cost for the quiet zone is borne by the local jurisdiction, yes. I think what was asked and is going to be under consideration is whether or not all energy could contribute to those costs. And that has not been answered, but that question has been asked.
I'm close enough now that I hear them a lot, and I just can't imagine hearing more. And I also can't imagine hearing the beep, 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 beep of the trucks backing up and dumping, because I'm right here. I'm by Fagan, you know, and it's like, oh, they're not back.
Yeah, they are back.
Okay. So there won't be any noise, right?
Did you ever hear Jake break? I understand you crossed the first time.
Diesel crossing.
Because some of those crossings are fairly involved, they're up and over a couple. You said the possibility for quiet zone could as well be four cross members coming down.
That is a possibility, but please don't take that as like that is a possibility. It's one of the ways those treatments have been addressed in the past. It's really up to what the Federal Railroad Administration of this district says it has to be. They're the ones that are responsible for that kind of safety determination.
Okay. So do we get the six beeps here, and then we get the six beeps at the campground. So we have this continuous horn year-round, either going either way, because they don't, by the time they shut up going past us, they're beeping again for the campground, you know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty annoying.
I guess that's something else I see. Hale there. He'd probably love to see no horn out there.
I can't imagine people camping right by that trap there.
Warren and I talked about that before, and then we were told that, you know, that's not going to happen.
Okay. All right. Lee Anford?
Yes, my concerns are tourism, one of how it affects Lake Erie River Harbor appeal. There's going to be noise affected by this by the train's decelerating. The loading of the cars, anyone goes up by their own power, when they unload the coal cars, the constant clanking of the cars hitching and unhitching. You can sit by the old Burlington restaurant in North Annapolis. You can hear those cars clanking. That noise, I believe, and I talked to some of your council members about this, is probably going to devalue some of the property in the North Annapolis City. you know, if you want to live there, listen to those noises. It's going to proceed out to the Martin and Indian Point residential areas in South Belvedere. Those areas are bigger tax bases for both Buffalo City and the township of Belvedere. I think that those things are things that need to be taken into consideration. Financial stability of the company. If you look at Dean's financial record, you know, he's got civil action against him, Jackson County, Trumbull County. His company, his corporations were dissolved by the federal or the Consumer and Trade Protection and Legal Laws in 2008. The length of time for these trains to get up to speed can affect the crossing as well, you know, on the other side. These trains typically, from what I've seen, can be up to a mile long. So you gotta think about how long it takes for that fully loaded train to get up to speed, how long you're tying up that crossing. That's affecting emergency services, whether it's a fire truck, an ambulance, a squad car. Things to take into consideration. You know, there's always talk about jobs coming to the community every time one of these different facilities are built. I think that's a big misnomer. Historically, what I've seen, and I've looked at different facilities and people come here to a place like that. What happens is a facility gets built, they bring other previously trained people that came to the facility that got shut down. They come and work that for the majority. They might hire a handful of people, you know, half a dozen people here or there, but you're really not bringing significant jobs back in the community. Highway 35 would have to be redesigned. You'd have to have a turn lane for coming in and going out, which would be a cost to the county for both maintenance and rebuild. Something to consider. Herman Street is currently a bus route for CFC schools. You know, if you shut down Herman Street from the Duke residence to Highway 35, those buses have to get rerouted. That's an additional cost for the school district, which comes back to taxpayers. Trucks leaving the facility, you have residual sand still in them. Are they going to be parked when they leave the facility? Otherwise, you have sand blowing off in the highway. Things to consider. Other thing I guess I'd ask you to take into consideration in my professional line of work, I interview people on a pretty regular basis. I read body language. You guys look at Ian's shirt, he's soaked in sweat. Typically, people suffer. There's a difference about the nervous sweat.
I didn't realize I was supposed to sign up if I wanted to speak. I didn't see that on the agenda where if you wanted to speak, you had to sign up.
I told everybody that at the beginning of the meeting, but
well, I maybe wasn't here and I didn't hear it, but I would like to speak. Whether I signed or not, I think I should have the right to speak.
Yeah. Can you wait till the end?
I will wait till the end. I just wanted to bring that up to you.
Kevin Cassidy.
Hi. I'd like to.
Okay.
I think we need to look at numbers here, okay? So let's start with the United States. It takes four semis to fill one hopper, okay? So in one train, it would take 420 truckloads. Four trains, 2,080 truckloads. That's what Mr. Sakawati wants to do in a week. Okay, now, another thing to add is, when the truck goes here, it has to go back the other way. So basically, what you've got is 4,160 truck movements going by CFC every week. Let's change that around and I'll talk about what Mel was kind of saying. Let's use an example of, let's say you're trucking 6 days a week.
Not for a week. Try again. Yeah. Help me out here.
Yeah.
Four trains, 420.
It takes 520 trucks to fill one train. That's right. So if you have four trains, it takes 2,080.
Okay.
Okay. the amount, because you can't just look at one truck coming, because they go back the other way. So you do have that amount. But let's look at a normal mine, for example. Let's say they operate from 6 in the morning to 6 in the evening, okay? I mean, we're going 6 days a week, okay? So, what have you got going there? You've got, actually, that comes down to 29 trucks a day, truck loads a day, and 58 trucks going by CFC every single hour of this truck, okay? So those are the numbers I want to look at, okay? Two things, and I think that it was just addressed the idea of the crossing. This is going to be a long, heavy train. It's going to take a long time to get up to speed. So forget about, you know, think about the first two crossings and Cochran being already blocked because of that, okay? That question was brought to the Vanderbilt and to All Energy at the Cochran meeting, and neither of them had an answer to what that meant. If they can say whether they will be blocked, they can say for how long they will be blocked. Now, okay? Put that on top of your question at the last meeting. Is there any operation of yours that we can go and visit and look at and see what you guys are doing? And there wasn't one. They started naming somebody else's operation over here, somebody else's operation over here. These guys are flying on the, you know, don't do this, people. Don't do this to all the communities around you. Because if you remember, 300 people came to the Elma School. And it wasn't just about that it was going to be a crossing TFC. It was about the amount of trucks and the whole operation. And those 300 people said, don't do it. Thank you.
Art Wilson.
Art
Kennedy. Great River Harbor. My concern is emergency. We're talking long trains. Great River Harbor has one in, one out, and they're both things. I'm a 75-year-old senior. I reside there during the summer. I am employed there. At 75, I have health issues, as several of our campers do have health issues, and they're seniors as myself. Any train slowing or blocking our crossing is a detriment to our facility, 100%. Noise. Well, you know what? We're on the river. You got to bring the river harder than you know. The noise part, we all learned to live with the trains going by continuously in the horn. What is frustrating, and if this spur situation takes care of it, is when a train pulls up on the north side of our crossing and sits there and idles all night long, and we hear the thump, thump, thump of those pistons and the pop-off of the compressor about every 10 minutes. I'm right dead on the track, Tom, on the north road, north end of the campground. It's frustrating. And here, as of late, there's been a lot of trains sitting there and idle. Now, if we spur, we'll take them down so they can idle down the road a little bit. I'm going to be on the road. And that's presuming that I'm going to be here for a few more years. And the only other issue is the M35. We have a large number of trucks. What is going to happen to 35 with all that truck usage on it? I don't know if you guys remember when they did all the sand filling over here in Belvedere. How many trucks a day? 400 trucks a day coming through Alma, down from the Alma Beach area or Alma, Virginia. And it was just basically a mess.
Peter, you're the BN specialist.
Yes.
Maybe you can enlighten us. How come we got all these trains driving on tracks?
That's a good question. So clearly our goal is not to have trains sit idle, right? And we could all agree that it's in everyone's best interest if that train is moving. So when it happens, and I'm not gonna deny it, it does, it happens, clearly you know it happens, if you live next to them. But it's for odd occurrences. It's for a crew ran into its hours. We had a, you know, maybe we had a derailment or a block crossing or an incident up the road that train got delayed and they couldn't make it to their crew change spot. Maybe there's a bad order car on that train and we had to pull off. You know, we have double main there, so maybe it's holding off on one of the mains while we get that wheel fixed. It could be any number of things, but the bottom line is it's not our intention to, it's not a scheduled stop on the railroad to pull that car, that train over and have it sit there.
Where is your double main at? Is that at the spur now? We call it the spur. 54 crosses in Illinois.
We are double tracked all the way through the Wisconsin, basically.
No, you are not.
No.
At Winona Junction to La Crosse, you're single tracked.
Yeah.
And you go north, you're single tracked by Prescott, south.
Excuse me.
Well, Prescott would go into Minneapolis.
Well, don't stand. Don't let him sit there and lie.
I can't. We can't say anything because you're running your mouth.
Well, let's be honest about it. Or else in
form. Well, you do. I'm sure you live next to the tracks. You probably know, obviously.
Yeah, I guess we do.
Thank you for clarification. Well,
I guess part of what I was wondering as well is that BN probably has the option as to where they idle their trains.
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. That's partly what I'm saying, too. I mean, if we have to pull the train over for some emergency situation, we clearly don't want it to block a road crossing. So there's probably limited spots on the track where you can have a whole train sit.
If something else, can we have you carry back at that crossing?
Thank you, lost his credibility.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, sir. Actually, that problem, idling problem, which has been, it's a very, very heavy situation here in the last month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If they would simply stop a quarter of a mile north from where they always land up in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a quarter mile from the crossing. So if they go back up or stop a quarter, let's say a half mile from the crossing, mm-hmm. which is not going to affect any crossings back north, mm-hmm. we probably wouldn't hear it. I know I wouldn't hear it.
Okay, you're getting more boring.
We got some initials on the list here, GRA. Eric, I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Jandro. Most of my issues have already been addressed, but I can give my time to Brock.
Not knowing it's his time.
Mel Ball.
This is public comment?
I've got into the trend in this in later life after retiring from the school business and being in the glass business in Menominee. It was the first site permitted for transporting sand. The big mine site in Menominee is in the city limits, across from the highway department, across from the courthouse, within a few hundred yards, and cardboard glass is about 1.3 miles. The misconception, I think, and it's the reason I really encourage a Sunday drive, an afternoon drive or whatever, to look and see, because that's the best way to tell. But in a site, when you talk about sand, there's 40,000 products. Every one of you use 15, 20 a day different products made out of sand. We had a water fountain out here talking about how is that water clean. Municipal water filters are about 16 inches in diameter, 8 foot long, produced in Menominee. They put 260,000 tons of sand a year to make glass, which is all the window glass for Anderson Window. The fiberglass insulation in the ceilings, computer chips, all the products that get shipped are made from sand than anything else, and it's all the same sand as your kids play and my grandkids play in the sandbox, what's in the beach, in the neighborhood of 95 to 98% silica.
So there isn't, and the other thing I would add is you can check with your county health department. Every county has a health department. They must maintain records of any serious health issues. And as an example, as I mentioned, 83 active mines in Chippewa County, 67 in Barron County, and they all have their health departments. And a lot of the mines are 2 and 3 and 4 generations of people running. They're there 7 days a week, many cases, a lot of them concrete, blacktop kind of product. And you won't find one case where they live with it, breathe it, load it in trucks, and whatever. You won't find one case of silicosis. Silicosis does exist in mines, usually closed mines, coal mines, and so on. But I think the big issue is you have to feel comfortable that it's not a danger, because there's a lot of misinformation out there that it's a dangerous product, and handling it is a dangerous product. The Menominee site, I have an article over there that I can share afterwards, was named by the DNR. They use, and the water issue came up, 2 to 3% of the water isn't recycled and reused and reused and reused and reused every day. It isn't like drawing a high volume well. You charge it with a high volume well, but then you recycle the water over and over. But it isn't an issue here, and the concern about somebody raised about what happens if they move a wet plant or a dry plant down here. If you got $20 million at a wet plant at a mine site, and another $25 million in a dry plant or a wet plant, you aren't going to, they're established, and it's economical to leave your waste product, your silt and clays, that you wash out at the mine site, not take it down here and haul it back to a mine site. So it isn't practical for that would ever happen, if you would bring it down to the site here, because then you'd be hauling back all about 15% waste, silt, clays that go back. So that isn't going to happen. And if anybody wanted to go visit a site, I'd be glad to leave my name here and say, give you a route of seeing mine sites, loadout sites. And all I can say is that it's no different than all of the black concrete plants, which are big products. Frac sand brings out issues, but that's 5% of what sand's used for. 38% in the glass business, foundry business. Every car, engine you drive, snowmobile, truck, or whatever is made with foundry sand. Same sand. And the big issue of silica into the air is basically the tread stock in your tires is made out of sand. That's how you get 70,000 mile tire versus a 20,000 mile tire. And
thank you, Mel.
Anyway, just I'd be glad to arrange visits if you want to take a visit to see some road outside of the mine site.
Jesus,
Hale and Janet Evans. I think my concerns have already been addressed, but I'd like to hear what Brock has to say too.
Yep. Yeah,
you're right.
All right. Anyway, come on, guys. So, I will start back in the top here. You know, the gentleman before me said, sand on the beach and in the sandbox. Well, that's a good place for the sand. You know, we don't want to be in the atmosphere on the highways or, you know, railroading station, so forth and so on. And back to the Burlington Northern people. Idle trains. Trains sit on these tracks from here to the Winona Junction. From Cochran to the Winona Junction, you will see as many as 3 trains sitting on the tracks. And not just for an hour. They have sat there for 12 to 20 hours at a time sometimes. And whether they know it or not, they put a spur in, a sagging spur down here on Penrowski Road. So these trains could switch back and forth and go around the train stop. So idle trains has been going on for many years, ever since they started shipping oil to North Dakota. And I hear so much of this tonight. I heard this word possibly, usually in examples, but the gentleman with this siding company, he doesn't even have a set of plans or blueprints to give out. But here we're looking for a permit. And the other thing I have a concern about is, why are they coming to Buffalo City when the land is located in Belvedere? What does Belvedere know that we don't know? You know, that's a great question. What, why don't they go to Belvedere and talk to them? That's where the land is. What are they coming to us for? You know, we as Buffalo City, you councilmen, you know, you're no experts on anything. You're a common Joe just like me. You spent a lot of time researching this, thinking this over, thinking this through. I mean, do you really want to spend that much time for having such little benefit? You know, I said, go back to Belvedere. Talk to Belvedere. That's where the local government is that's taking care of this. So that's, you know, it's a way of life and a quality of life that can get disrupted from an operation like this. You know, we live here because we like the quality of life we have. Sure, we have trains. We knew trains were there when we moved here. But we can, like the gentleman said, you can live with the train whistles and so forth and so on. That's not a big deal. But the other gentleman said, when those trains leave that Elma coal site, boy, that's a slow process before they get up to speed, and a slow process coming into town. That beach crossing can get blocked for a long time, coming in, going, and there's a lot of clanking. And of course, a lot of times they have diversified engines. And for those of you who don't know what that is, a diversified engine is an engine on the rear to take up the slack on the couplings. That's why they have that engine on the rear, because it gets so much pressure on the couplings, these long trains. So it's pretty much a quality of life that you really got to look at here if you want to prove something like this. And the other thing is the jobs. The one gentleman said the jobs. We got plenty of jobs in this community. La Crosse Milling's looking for jobs. Winona's looking for jobs. Ashley's looking for jobs. There's not going to be that many jobs that come out of this operation. And the other thing is, look at Highway 37. That was a grandiose sand mine operation up there, too. So they had to pay the state to put these bypass lanes in South Mondovi. But guess what? It's not used then. It never got used. So the state and the taxpayers have to spend all that extra money frogging around trying to plow the snow by it. You know, what's going to happen when the roads get resurfaced? Are we going to have to put that back in, or what's going to happen? Just take this to heart, guys. You know, take it to heart, think about it, put yourself in the position of the people that use Cleveland Road and Herman Street Road, and the people that live close by and have nice property close by. There is just one tremendous amount of noise and disruption from an operation like this. Common sense tells you that.
My name is Jim Wilkie. I'm the mayor of Alma. I was at your last meeting, informational meeting, at which time the gentleman from All Energy stated, when I was worried about traffic through Alma, that there would be no traffic, no truck traffic coming from that direction. And I really appreciate his commitment to that. But that's not a legal commitment. That's just something said at a meeting. And I would encourage you, if you are pursuing zoning for this, that you make one of the conditions of that use permit that no trucks come from that direction. Then it would have teeth to it. So I'm suggesting that from the standpoint of the city of Alma, but I'm asking that as a possible condition for zoning that use. Alma has a racetrack, and we do get unit trains with coal. One thing I would point out is that the time, most of the time is taken when the train comes into Alma. It's parked for 10, 15 minutes while they open the gates and get things ready to go on the racetrack. In other words, it doesn't just zoom off the line onto the racetrack. It's a slow process of people walking over and doing things, and then something happens. So it isn't a matter of a train slowing down to get onto the facility. It stops while they get ready to bring it in. The Darylin facility has been great in Alma in that there hasn't been any dust that we know of. And I would encourage you to put standards in place on your permitting process so that you have a way to monitor what dust does come out of it and have teeth in it so you can shut them down if they violate it. If you assess this $17 million facility, you're going to get a tremendous amount of real estate tax from it. More power to you. We don't get anything from the power plant. That's just the way Wisconsin is. But if it fails, the assessed value of a failed facility is its economic value, which would be very small. So you do have a risk in that. Or if the facility is not finished, you'll have an unfinished facility with no value for assessed value. Part of my past is in venture capital, and I would encourage you, and several people have brought this up, that you demand to see financial statements from the principals involved in this group. Not the corporation or the partnership, but the actual individuals backing it, because that's who you would have to go after if you need to. And you need to find those numbers and go over them very carefully with your accountants. Thank you very much.
W-I-L-K-I-E.
My name is John Gaston. I've been living in the town for over here. I'm also a member of the Board of Adjustments here in Buffalo County. So I do have a couple of comments. One, the gentleman mentioned something about there not being any dust on the sites. I'll just disagree, respectfully so, but I really disagree. I'm going to pass New Auburn site enough to tell you that I do know the difference. And that's firsthand knowledge, that's not secondhand. Second, be careful when you start looking at what the proposed tax benefits are from this thing, because there's only certain parts that you're going to be able to assess. I'm sure you're aware of that. And the deep box, you're not going to see that. I don't tell you that right up front. There's a reason they're coming here for annexation. One of the questions you should ask yourself is why they haven't talked to the town of Belvedere yet. And the reason probably is the town of Belvedere has its zoning administered by Buffalo County. And I think they know that there's some issues with this site from the county's perspective as well. Now, I can't speak for the county. I'm not here speaking for the county. I'm speaking as a resident of the county, but not as a representative. Just wanted to make those points. Thank you.
I appreciated the comment he made about the truck traffic and the school and then timing it in such a way that it doesn't interfere with the buses and that kind of thing. But then his other comment was trimming when he said, in the summertime when school is out, we can double up or, do so much more. Well, summertime is the time when this area is the area that it is, with the tourists and the boats and the, all of that. So bear that in mind also.
I just had a question. I may have missed it, but let's say this is okayed and it goes through. Does this give these guys a free pass to add or do anything else they want to add to this? Will there be more meetings, more information?
It was, a lot of it would be based on what we were committed to, which, the way I didn't bring in the zoning.
Does it have to be rezoned after it's annexed, so that would have to be part of the use for the.
And nothing's gonna happen, really, with a lot more community involvement. This is not, okay, we had a meeting, now there's a decision to make, there's a whole lot more fact finding. By their admission, they're not certain what it is they want to erect. We would have to see architectural drawings, we would get an opportunity to speak to our zoning, we would more than likely get an opportunity to voting, to, and up or down. So, no, this is not a, okay, we had a meeting, let's run, this is, all we're doing is scratching the surface, that's it, this is information for the community right now, if anybody wants to.
Thank you.
Ron Stolz, Southwell Supervisor of Town of Belvidere here, as far as Belvidere, we've never been approached at all. All we know is what hearsay between the two meetings and you two guys, the dot. It's gonna impact Belvidere a lot more than it's gonna impact Buffalo City. Everything on that end is Belvidere, all the noise and stuff is gonna bother Buffalo City, then. Maybe a couple up on the upper end, but for the most back, most part of it, it's up there. We also have a business owner that has a sand that's right there. Trucks and that on it, goes out that road for a reason, and what do we do with them? You know, our roads go the other way, it isn't built up to snuff, to hold that, we just redid the other road going out to hold the truck traffic. You know, so that impacts Belvidere there also, but mainly, all the noise, all the dirt and dust, all the stuff is on our end. And these towns wide worked together before, and you know, there is possibility of Belvidere can fight. So, everybody gets along now, he's gonna stay that way. And very misinformed, I mean, he can't hardly tell us what's going on up there. I mean, he should have a friend, tell us what kind of buildings are going up there, what kind of structures going up there. I build houses for a living, I don't go and approach people without even having a clue what's going on. I mean, you gotta go in the back of your head what you're building. You just can't come and say, I don't know this, I don't know that. I mean, after we just spent $17 million, you just don't walk in a building and say, well, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I mean, I'm just a stupid carpenter, but anybody can figure that out. You gotta have some answers for people when you walk in a building like this.
I just wonder, it's me, what's the truck route? Where is it coming from? Where is the streets it's going down? I just wanna know where the truck route starts. I know it's gonna end there, but where is it going? Or coming from?
Can I get your name, please?
Sumo Rosa. Is it coming down 88? Is it coming down, go past the school? Where's the truck route?
Hey, truth, we don't know either, we don't have that.
I mean, if you build a facility, you must have contact where the sand is coming from, before you build it, won't you?
All right, I got a letter to read here, I'll read the guy that works, he's got it. He can get a chance to talk.
I'm John Creason, I'm your county board representative, and have been for some number of years, and I've served on the zoning committee for Buffalo County. We're in the process of redoing zoning ordinance within the county that hasn't been touched in 50 years. And a big part of what we're talking about is part of the rezone. And our intent in doing the rezone was to protect what we have here in Riverbend. Once we lose what we have here in Riverbend, it's gone forever. And that's our intent. And this is just, as stated before, is just a mechanism to get around the county zoning ordinances and get it into the city perspective where it maybe has less study and less scrutiny that we've given it. You know, I'm really not in favor of going around the structure we already have set up for evaluating these. Our Board of Adjustments has done a good job and has been, their decision-making has been affirmed by the State Supreme Court on a couple of occasions, and they make good decisions. And I'm just not encouraging either communities around here to annex this property.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, this letter's from Dave Danziger, Paul Belvedere, Chairman. Annexation concerns. Give me a minute, get your name right. Dean Sakawati, Sakawati Square, has attended two Cochran Council meetings and one Buffalo City Council meeting, prior to the second. At these meetings, Dean and Ron Fleury proposed annexing land owned by Ron Fleury into Cochran or Buffalo City. Dean is proposing a crack sand train loadout site that will handle 4 trucks an hour, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. This frac sand will be trucked in from locations which Dean would not name. Nowhere can I find a sand mine, sand wash plant, or sand loadout site that All Energy Corporation owns or operates. I did find, as of October 24, 2016, the Securities and Exchange Commission revoked All Energy registration. Dean's name does appear in legal action in Jackson County and Trumbull County. The only reason this annexation is being proposed is to avoid the current zoning laws that govern development in the town of Belvedere. The town of Belvedere is currently under county zoning. The zoning was developed by the town of Belvedere and Buffalo County by holding land use meetings and developing a long-range land use plan. These plans allow for housing growth in Belvedere. Most of this growth is from Buffalo City to the railroad tracks on both the south and north ends of Buffalo City. Tom Belvedere has had a long history of cooperation with the Buffalo City and Cochran. These municipalities currently share a fire department, EMT, drainage district, and recycling center. Several times in the past, annexation of Belvedere land by Cochran has occurred, including land for golf course, lacrosse milling, apartments, and a recycling center. All these annexations were contiguous and to the mutually benefit of citizens of both municipalities. In the past, annexation discussions were held between municipal officials before the annexation. In this proposed annexation, we have not had any contact from Buffalo City, Cochran, or All Energy. The town of Belvedere is very concerned that annexation such as this can be discussed without Belvedere presence. How is it fair that Buffalo City or Cochran can annex land and change its zoning when citizens of Belvedere have had meetings and determined what they felt was best for the township? How will this affect Belvedere's ability to work with Cochran and Buffalo City on future projects? If the town of Belvedere can have land taken from it and used for purposes which its citizens feel are not in the best interest of the town, then what option does the town of Belvedere have to protect citizens' rights? If this annexation would happen, town of Belvedere citizens would not have any way to address light, noise, traffic, dust, and land evaluation that will occur. I think that would be in best interest of the three municipalities if we were to have a meeting discussing annexation and development. If this annexation occurs, it will force town of Belvedere to challenge in court. A town chairman in Trumbull County said that legal action has cost as much as $100,000 for each municipality and can take 3 years. Citizens of Cochran, Buffalo City, and Belvedere, please let your elected officials know how you feel about this annexation attempt. David Danziger, town of Belvedere, chairman.
I'd like to address the statements about All Energy and Trumbull County being in court. All Energy challenged the Trumbull County, went to the State Supreme Court, and the State Supreme Court's decision was that this is a legislative issue, had to do with the police powers that were part of the process. And as a result of that, in November of last year, Governor Walker signed what's called Act 67. They changed the law in the state of Wisconsin so that zoning
required that if a company like All Energy versus Trumbull County met the conditions of the permit, that permit must be granted. And as a result of that, the municipalities are now rewriting their zoning laws. So that's what occurred as a result of the All Energy case in Trumbull County. The Jackson County case against All Energy is three adjacent landowners that sued All Energy for a anticipatory nuisance. Not a nuisance that's ever occurred, but one that might happen. So if you believe that that's legitimate, you know, so be it, I guess. I just want to explain what this is about. I want to thank you all for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Did you have anything to add?
Nothing further, thanks.
No, I guess not.
Went through everybody's name on here.